10:37, 23 minutes now before the hour of 7 o'clock. Our next guest, Cheryl Atkison, has been a working journalist for more than 30 years. You'll recognize her. She's a host of Sinclair's Sunday morning TV program, Full Measure, with Cheryl Atkison. She has won 5 Emmys, is an Edward R. Murrow Award for investigative reporting. She's worked at CBS, PBS, and CNN. Cheryl joins us now on our Newsmaker Hotline. Good morning, Cheryl.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
It is our pleasure. So how does it feel to be on the endangered species list as one of the last few investigative journalists in free press in America today?
Gosh, that's a big question, isn't it? You'll see in Flanders that I actually talked to quite a few journalists, people who ran news divisions, insiders at New York Times, CNN. A lot of journalists feel the same way that I do, maybe you do, but they're not so free to always express it. And that's what I think partly makes the book so original. And we tackle the death of the news as we once knew it. I like to ask people when I interviewed them, is the death of the news murder or suicide? And that's based on the idea that some people said, oh, it's Donald Trump that's hurt the confidence in the news and changed what it is. But pretty much everybody I ask in the industry agrees that we did this to ourselves. And so I really am kind of doing a deep dive into that.
Yeah, the book is excellent, by the way. It's called Slanted, How the News Media Taught Us How to Love Censorship and Hate Journalism. I want to play a soundbite for you. This is from one of your colleagues at PBS, Yamiche Alcindor. She was on MSNBC yesterday talking about the incoming Biden cabinet. Here's what she said.
The other thing I'll just say is I was talking to a Democrat who just said this also felt like the Avengers. It felt like we're being rescued from this craziness that we've all lived through from the last 40 years, and now here are the superheroes to come and save us all.
So here's a PBS reporter comparing a incoming Biden and trans cabinet members to the Avengers superheroes, dropping the veil of impartiality for all to see. Your thoughts?
That's just par for the course. So we were edging toward that information landscape where opinion by the reporters and fact are blurred together and not even marked as such anymore. But in 2016, we didn't even try anymore once Trump entered the scene and the narrative machine got busy on him. And we no longer tried to even have that firewall we used to at least try to have between news and opinion. And then reporters are rewarded for that kind of behavior rather than being taken to task. And even nonprofit journalism groups and watchdogs who should be looking at this sort of thing, they too have been co-opted by the political and corporate interests that want to push out narratives. So they're cheering it on as well. And it's sort of a sad situation, at least from a standpoint of what I always thought of journalism as being.
Well, where's this coming from? Is this what's being taught in at the Columbia School of Journalism now, or is it corporate pressure, or is it just that you have so many like-minded individuals now choosing this profession that they've chosen political advocacy over good standard journalism?
Well, it's a mix of that. As I described in my last book, The Smear, there's an organized propaganda industry, a multi-billion dollar smear industry, as I call it, of political action committees, nonprofits, LLCs, just all kinds of groups, global law firms, PR crisis firms, that have figured out how to get in our newsrooms and influence what we do and don't report. But now we've hired them in our newsrooms. These operatives work for us, and this is all part of the plan, quite frankly. And we invited as journalists, instead of being careful to make sure that our basic tenets of journalism were followed and we kept that firewall, we started blending it together in a way that now is no longer distinguishable between the two. So the goal is no longer to present facts at many news organizations. It's to keep certain facts from you. It's not to let you hear from a variety of views. It's to tell you what to think and not let you believe a certain view is valid. And this is all driven, yes, there's ideology involved on the part of those who are reporting, but make no mistake, there is a very organized group of political and corporate interests behind the scenes driving all of this, including the big tech censorship. And if you really want to do a deep dive, my last book, The Smear, talks about that industry. The new one sort of talks about how it has now taken hold in news organizations, but also social media with the censorship that we're seeing.
I'm talking to Cheryl Atkison. Her excellent new book is Slanted, How the News Media Taught Us to Love Censorship and Hate Journalism. You mentioned big tech, Cheryl, and Twitter. really, you know what, hit the fan when they took down the New York Post because of the series they were running on the Hunter Biden laptop. That is something that they're supposed to be a platform for free expression, and now they've become a publisher. Are you concerned about the few outlets that still want to report real news, objective news, for people to decide and think for themselves? They seem to be being squeezed by big media and big tech.
Well, they are, and I interviewed one executive at a national news organization. I mean, this is chilling, but I think this is not that unusual. He said that because of the cancel culture and the power of big tech, which is driven by, again, political and corporate interests, telling them what to do, telling them what views to allow and not to allow, what scientific studies we're supposed to see and not, this executive acknowledged that, as he said, I pull my punches. He said the newsman in me wants to tell the truth, but then he went on to say that he knows that if, as a result of telling the truth, these organized interests organize the mobs on social media and these campaigns to boycott and controversialize, if they don't survive as a news organization, or if the reporter gets attacked and controversialized out of business, then he said, what sort of Pyrrhic victory is that? So they pull their punches. Now think about that. He's saying, and this is happening at other news organizations, that even those who want to be fair are not able to do so or pull their punches in reporting full information for fear of being canceled and attacked successfully by this organized campaign.
Wow. Just a couple of seconds left here. I just want to get your thoughts. There was a recent article, The Daily Caller, detailing that the Chinese have been either paying outlets like the Wall Street Journal, LA Times, Boston Globe for printed articles or printing expenses. Does that put, again, undue pressure? These papers are struggling. Some of these other media outlets are struggling. Now you have a foreign influence in these media companies?
I think I haven't investigated that aspect as much or seen as much of that impact. I don't doubt that it exists, but I'm sort of on the other side of a lot of people who think that all of this is financial driven, that the death of the news as we once knew it is because people are seeking clicks and dollars. I talk about examples, as I've written in the past, where there are decisions being made at news organizations that are contrary to the viewer's interest and to drawing viewers and drawing dollars. It's not all driven by advertising money. And to understand why that's the case, you have to see that the overarching power and control of the narratives that we talk about are bigger than that. They're political and corporate interests that are able to pull strings beyond and make you do things as a news organization that are actually contrary to your interests as a news organization.
It's a great book.
That's what we're seeing.
Great book. Slanted. Cheryl Axon. Cheryl, thanks for joining us. Have a happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you for having me.
Our pleasure.